Welcome to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 97, and I am Libya, your host, and this week we have returning guests.
Hi, I'm Tom from Glendale.
I'm Marcia from Encino.
Peter from West Hollywood.
All right, and in the news this week, welcome guys. And in the news this week, the only thing that I have is that Alan Ball, the creator of True Blood, has been greenlit to do a series on Cinemax, meaning more skin, which is hard to imagine from True Blood. And his new series is called Banshee. But I don't really know what it's about. I'm just assuming since it's on Cinemax, it's going to have a lot of sex.
I guess HBO's pimping him out to their sister network so they can get a signature series that doesn't stink.
Well, I like Strike Back. Strike Back on Cinemax is pretty
good.
Yeah,
but it's not really a... It's really a BBC... It's
That's true. That is true.
They did not show season one to Americans. Thank you very much.
Oh, I saw that already. But anyway.
Anyway.
Anyone else have any news? Tom?
Yes. John Bernthal, who plays Shane on Walking Dead, is the top candidate to be the lead in the L.A. Noir pilot directed by Frank Darabont, which is very interesting because that leaves questions about his character's fate, which if you read the comic books, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, but that should have happened like season one, right?
Okay, but it basically says we're going to get what I've been wanting because somebody's got to take that guy out.
Yeah, but
he's evil.
But also remember, we're talking 13 episode shows. So a lot of people now, almost as much as England, they can do a show here, a show there, a show somewhere
That's
else.
That's true.
This is true.
Yeah. All right, Peter, you said you had some news?
Oh, no, it's not really news. It's just that iTunes... And actually, I think Hulu also is previewing the full pilot for Smash, that new musical kind of drama. And I watched it. I liked it. It's going to air, I guess, the day after the Super Bowl. So probably, maybe in a week and a day or something. I overall liked it. I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys think of it. I don't think it's – someone was saying it's like a Glee. I mean, it's a musical, but I mean, I don't really think, you know, everything with music is like Glee. So I don't – think that comparison fits at all, but good production value, you know, so I liked it, dug it.
Good actors, unlikely.
Ooh, snap.
Well, I mean, you know, shows like that are more about the performances, but actually, I mean, Deborah Messing's good, and yeah, there's some good.
It's got Angelica Houston in it. Hello.
Okay.
It's got a quick cast.
Yeah, like good. Well. I mean, the two main singers, one is Catherine McVie, who's not really an actress. She's okay. She's fine, and then there's a blonde girl, but I don't really
know
who she is, but she's been fine.
Megan
know?
Hilty, who is a big-time Broadway star.
Right, so she actually can act.
Yeah, what? I've heard she's, like, up way up here, and then there's Catherine McPhee. It's like, hey, we've got a real Broadway star, and we have an American Idol reject.
Oh, wow.
Who are you going to cast as Marilyn Monroe?
I wouldn't say it's that. No, I wouldn't say that's not. That's just being snarky. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not a huge Catherine McPhee fan, but I don't think the way the show's designed, it doesn't feel that way. You mean you just feel like there are two people trying to make it. It's not that apparent, or at least I didn't think it was.
And I forgot to mention, I want to remind everybody that Fairly Legal, the revamped version, is coming back to USA very soon. So if you sort of liked season one, then I think you should maybe sort of give this new season a shot.
Or if you tolerated season one because you happen to know one of the actors... And you like the others?
Or if you liked the first episode and then wondered what the hell happened, then definitely watch it.
I'm going to check it out. So, all right, let's move on to the shows. And first up, we want to talk about Once Upon a Time. Everyone sighs
Could
in the
they
room.
They please move the story arc and storybook faster, my word. I mean, they introduce who is this mysterious stranger who rides into town on a motorcycle and do absolutely nothing with him the entire episode.
They reveal that he has a typewriter.
Ooh.
A manual typewriter. A manual typewriter.
Maybe it's one of the brothers Grimm, Escape from NBC's show.
No, what's funny...
It's actually not a bad thing, okay?
Well, what's funny is that Once Upon a Time the week before did Hansel and Gretel, and the next new episode of Grimm is Hansel and Gretel. I was like, are you guys coordinating at all? Because that's really bad.
Yeah, what's funny is that the interview that I did that is going to be up on the sister site with David Greenwald and Jim Koff, that was a question. How they feel about, you know, Once Upon a Time, and they said, you know, it's a completely different show, and it's got its greatness about it. And they were really, really good about not knocking it. However,
they both need to advance their story arcs faster.
That's true.
Yes.
Because the standalone nature of the shows just only goes so far.
Well, this show especially, it's obviously an ongoing story, and you want to know the next segment. And I'd say the last good one they had was with Rumpelstiltskin. And this one, it's like the love story. You know they're not going to get back together exactly. But they did end up kissing at the end, so maybe.
Well, the problem is that you kiss her, you die. So,
well, no, he doesn't die.
The other one did.
Well, that's because she had the queen had the heart.
She had the heart.
Right. Well, we don't know who this person is. You know, there are questions.
No, but... I meant.
She's talking about Charming and Snow.
Yeah, that's what I was talking about.
Oh, I'm sorry. I gave up on them.
Believe...
No, they got together at the end of the episode.
I still gave up on
them. I can't believe they've done nothing more with Snow finding out from Emma that, yeah, Henry thinks you're my mom. I'm sorry. That would kind of be freaky if you find out your roommate / good friend
is supposed to be your daughter.
Supposed to be your biological, you know, daughter.
And I'd be like, wow, you do sort of look like me. they really do look alike, too.
I just wish they'd give Emma more to do. I like the actress so much from House and other things, but boy, they don't service her well. They just give her... They're using her more as a placeholder and literally a traffic cop for everybody other characters. We need to be fully invested in her storyline, and they keep playing the same beats with her and Henry and Damare. It's like, come on.
That's true.
It just frustrates me. I want to love this show. I like it, but my patience is growing. It's growing thin as that thread in Sleeping Beauty's spinning wheel.
Wow.
I'll take that then, as we are all still watching Once Upon a Time. However, if it doesn't get its act together, we might not be watching it.
They better have some hellacious sweeps episodes coming up. That's all I gotta say.
Yeah.
Well, I think I saw a preview, and it looked like some stuff was happening in the preview.
Something happened?
Oh my gosh! This week on Once Upon a Time, something happens.
All right. Enough with the snarky. The next show we want to talk about is House of Lies, and apparently I'm the only one who still likes this show.
I didn't say I didn't like it, I just didn't like episode 3. I thought episode 1 was fun, I thought episode 2 was not as much fun, episode 3 was more of a chore to get through.
Why?
Again, they're playing the same beats with the characters. What's Marty? Marty's, you know...
I forget who's Marty.
Don Cheadle.
Oh, okay.
You know, Marty's obnoxious, everybody hates him, blah, 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 blah. They even brought back Greg German from the pilot.
Right.
It's just more of the same. Take the story somewhere we haven't seen it before.
Peter?
Yeah, I don't like the show at all anymore. Like, I thought the pilot was okay, the second episode was all right. I thought this episode was pretty lame. And I already didn't like the whole, their gimmick of how they stop time and then he talks to the camera. I already didn't like that. And then in this episode, they just went full on cartoon where they're like a factory and he's weaving in and out with the people and he's like moving their hands and they do these terrible sound effects like wah, wah, wah. And I was like, oh my God. Like, it was just so awful. Like, I mean, I really was just like, oh, this is terrible. Like,
I don't know why that bothers you so much. It doesn't bother me at all.
It's just dumb. You know, I mean, I just think it's really stupid and everything. And, I don't even think the cases are very interesting. Like, honestly, I don't care about some consulting firm as a premise for a TV show. But if you're going to do that, then I'm hoping that, you know, whatever their story of the week is interesting. And I haven't found any of them really that interesting. I think it's like a C- now. I think it went from like C+, B-, and now I'm just like, oh, this show's bad. Like, I just, it's a shame because I like Don Cheadle, I like Kristen Bell.
And also, you know, but I mean, yeah. You're judging the whole show on one episode you didn't like, though. You changed
the entire... No, but I didn't really like the first two either, though. Like I said, the first one was like a B-, second one was like a C+. It's just getting worse. It'd be one thing if the pilot was awesome and then these two haven't been, I'd be like, well, okay. But none of them have really impressed me. They've just all been somewhat different, varying degrees of mediocre. So, you know, I don't really care for it. I know you really like it, though, which is cool, but it doesn't do it for me.
I don't dislike the show as much as Peter. My biggest problem is, in a show like this where you have an anti-hero and a bunch of anti-heroes as supporting characters, there needs to be somebody you can root for. aside from the kid.
I actually root for Marty.
I don't root for Marty. I agree. I agree with Tom.
Because he's so awful.
Yeah, I like Don Cheadle, but I think he's a pretty annoying character.
No, he doesn't annoy me at all.
He's a pretty loathsome character. I think he kind of crossed a line in episode 2 when he sabotages her job offer.
But I would agree with you in that, except that her reaction was that she liked that and it proved that she was valuable to him. So because she wasn't like... Because you're right. In a normal situation, that would be the end of a friendship when you realize somebody did that to you. However, she took it to mean he found her invaluable and she liked that. And she didn't really want to go anywhere. So because of her reaction, it was fine.
Although I think for me, what I want out of this series is I kind of want more of their Sam and Diane, Sam and Rebecca
right, I do too.
Thing. And I that was kind of missing from episode 3.
Actually, they spent almost all their time together in episode 3.
Yeah, but I didn't think it worked. It didn't work for me. I don't know.
It worked. Like I said,
I will keep watching for a while, but it's hanging, you know, it's hanging by a thread.
Well, I'm still enjoying it. You guys can take what you may from that. Next up is Downton Abbey. And I know that I still have yet, that's one of those shows I have to watch. I'm sure I'm going to marathon it at some point. But I haven't done that yet. So, Tom, you said you wanted to talk about it a second.
I'll talk about it a little bit. I just want to give props to Allison for turning me on to Downton Abbey. Allison was talking about it a couple weeks ago. So the weekend of the season 2 premiere on PBS, I Netflixed all of season 1 in 2 days and then started watching the season 2 premiere. It's very engaging. And I'm not a big doily movie type of person. I didn't really care for, I can't even think of the name of it, Julian Fellowes, who created Downton Abbey, did like this murder mystery that he won an Oscar for writing. I can't think of it. It had, all-star British cast and Ryan Phillippe. But it's kind of a contemporary take on an upstairs, downstairs type thing, the old 70s miniseries.
It's not exactly contemporary, though.
Well, contemporary as in it's from the 21st century. But what's kind of cool about the series premiere is the Titanic has just happened. And the heir to Downton Abbey has perished in the Titanic.
Right.
So the third cousin of the main family becomes the heir apparent.
Right.
So all kinds of political intrigue and women can't inherit property.
But I think because I've seen the first 3 episodes. So there was a particular reason why the daughters couldn't inherit because it was part of the will in order to get married. Because normally they would have been able to.
I thought it was because of the times they were living. Basically, the women, even though they have it, it has to be associated with the man.
Because the wife was actually more wealthy than the husband, and she was annoyed that all her money wasn't going to go to her daughters.
Right.
And so there was like this whole thing in the way that they got married. They made a contract or something.
Yeah, it's weird. But anyway, the logical thing is for Mary, the eldest daughter, to marry third cousin Matthew.
Right.
And of course.
They don't like each other at all.
Initially, they don't like each other at all, but of course, it's like the typical romantic comedy trope. You know, the people who don't get along by the end end up falling in love. And the glitch is that the matriarch gets pregnant, and so that child will be the heir if it's a male, and it was a male. But the evil, scheming maid O'Brien...
Oh, that always trips me out about how those guys scheme like crazy.
Inadvertently causes a miscarriage, and so
how do they know it's a male? Never mind.
They know it's a. I mean, they did have science in 20.
Yeah, but they didn't have sonograms.
Well, but it was a boy. So Mary and Matthew have this on again, off again, and so by the time they end up falling for each other, she totally blows him off because it looks like she's going to have a younger brother who's going to inherit. Mom miscarries. And so now she wants to pursue Matthew again, but she's already kind of broken his heart. And then season 1 ends with the onset of World War I. And so Matthew ends up getting called into service, and some of the other servants end up going into the service, et cetera, et cetera. But as we begin season 2, the war is fully on, and Mary has a dark secret. She was having this torrid fling with this guy who ends up dying in her bed. And her sister sells her out to the embassy. He was like a foreign national.
But basically,
all kinds of political intrigue. It's very well done. It's not just a chick flick type of thing. There's enough stuff to sustain guys' interest too. But well acted, well directed, great cast, just thoroughly engrossing and engaging, and I highly recommend it. And thanks, Allison, for turning me on.
All right. Next up, we want to talk about Castle.
This was the dog show.
Oh, no. Yes.
No.
Yes,
it was.
Oh, yeah. With the reality TV show personality played by our friend Hillary Burton from White Collar.
Oh, I was like, played by our friend. She was on White Collar?
She's the insurance adjuster.
Dude, I've never liked any of his girlfriends. They are wiped from my brain.
Okay, well it's her with bigger hair.
Okay.
And a foo-foo dog.
Yeah, and Justin Hartley, formerly of Smallville, as Green Arrow.
Yes, I did recognize Green Arrow.
As her no-good Nick boyfriend.
Right.
And we're back to the Castle standby of you can figure out who the bad guy is very
early
on
the first suspect.
But it doesn't matter, because Castle's about the fun of watching the characters.
But yes. It was also a cute story for a change. That the story weaved itself around, even though you knew who was guilty, the reason why kept changing. And I thought it was cute. The idea that the dog trainer who got killed, you know, is he working for the government? Is he not working for the government? Was he
part of the mob?
Was he breeding dogs for, and other dog owners were afraid his new version of the breed was going to push all their dogs out of the way. I mean, it was cute. And I like the idea that the daughter was back because I like her. I like his interactions with her. Yeah. And it let it be known toward the end that even though she's going to go off to college, she will come back.
It's a New York school.
And she's going to come back and visit him a lot.
Yep.
Yes. And that's really nice to know. But it was adorable.
I thought he was going to get a dog. I was almost happy.
He thought he was going to get a dog. He thought he was going to get a good-looking dog.
Yeah, that was cool. That was pretty cool. And they had the nice little romantic moment. Let's not forget that awkward, well, it didn't start off awkward, but ended up being awkward moment between them. He's like, oh, no, you have to rub between his eyes right here.
As he's rubbing on her on her wrist.
Yeah, yeah, and it turned really romantic really fast. And I was like, all right.
So I can say, you know, as much as I watch Castle for Nathan Fillion, because, well, you know, it's him. It was a nice story. I liked the way that they wrote it. And it was definitely, it's candy. It's TV candy.
Yes. Next up is the second episode of Lost Girl, which I think I'm the only one who watched. Is that correct?
Probably.
Marcia is putting her hands up and stepping away from the microphone. I might be the only one who watched the show and likes the show. I don't know. But, I mean, it's not the greatest show ever. But it's a nice sci-fi fantasy show, and the girl is not a vampire, which I like. However, the guy, I think, they haven't established what he is, but I think he's supposed to be a vampire. Like, I'm not sure what he is. But they've introduced the concept of her trying to get control of her powers, and they've introduced the concept of, like, not exactly a prophecy, but her whole thing was at some point she was kidnapped. From her parents. She thought her parents just dumped her and she got adopted or whatever. But now we find out that something happened to her parents and they hid her away for her safety. But she doesn't know who her parents are. But what we figured out is everybody else in Faye does. They're all pretty sure they know who her parents are. And they know, they're like, oh, is the lost girl who we think she is? And I'm like, all right, now you got to tell the story. What the heck is this? So I think that's pretty interesting. And I want to know what happens. And the episode itself was more about parents' relationship with their kids. Because they established that if both of your parents have to be Fae for you to have Fae powers. If both of your parents are not Fae, then you're just a regular human. And so this kid, his mom had said his whole life that she had slept with some guy who was glowing in the forest. And nobody believed her. Everybody thought she was crazy. And then he figured out that his father was a Bright or something, but like a, I forgot what they're called, but he spent his whole life tracking down his father. But his father thought that he was after his treasure, so they've been fighting. And he actually sent an assassin to kill him, and then he found out it was his son, and he was like, oops. Because he was like, well, call off the assassin. He's like, yeah, these aren't those kind of assassins that you can call off. So that became, it was kind of funny and it was kind of touching. So I liked it. And they introduced a wider mystery. So, yeah. Though the special effect fires was pretty cheap.
What network is this on?
Siffy.
It's on. Oh, but
they had a budget?
But it was actually produced. It's a Canadian show. They're already in season 2 in Canada.
Oh, okay.
So they're just, they just bought the rights.
They just sublet it.
Right.
Okay, then all right, then there is a budget. Okay.
Right. But except, like I said, the sci-fi or the CGI fire was pretty cheap looking.
Well, every show starts off a little odd, and then we'll see how
hopefully
it is
they get
year.
More money.
Yeah, hopefully for season 2.
All right. Next up, let's talk about Justified. This is not the season premiere, but second episode.
Season 2.
Second episode.
No,
season
3.
Oh, sorry, season 3 episode
yes.
2.
It was good. It was kind of like a. What I liked most about it was that we got to spend a lot of time with other characters besides Raylan. But it wasn't really, like, the premiere I thought was outstanding. This was more to me like, oh, they're kind of, like, putting the pieces in play to, you know, get us to the, you know, what the bigger seasonal arcs are going to be. But, I mean, anytime we get to spend a lot of time with Boyd and so, I mean, I'm always going to love that. So, yeah, I mean, I thought it was great. You know, I really like Boyd and the prison and, you know, Raylan basically was, I guess, slow last week. He didn't realize that Boyd was playing him. And so he goes to get Boyd out of prison. And, of course, Boyd doesn't want that because he wants to take care of the Bennett boy who shot Ava. And it was all really good. It was just, I thought it was really satisfying.
I like
so,
the fact that you. Yeah. I like the fact that you think you know why Boyd wants to get what's his Nicky?
Dickie Bennett.
You think you know why he wants to get him, and then when you know when he finally does everything comes together, the reveal is completely different.
Oh well, if you're paying attention from the previous episode, it's very clear he wants to find the money.
I didn't see that. I thought he just wanted to
actually,
kill
her. I agree with Livia. I did not see that coming.
I didn't either.
Oh, I disagree. I think it's pretty clear from the premiere that he wants the money, and if he can figure out how to get the money without Dickie's dead.
Well, how do you see he's trying to get the money? There's no indication that he was hunting for the money at all.
Oh, yeah, there is. Because there's the whole question of, there's more money, this is not it.
Oh, you mean when he goes into Raylan's office and Raylan is questioning him?
No.
Because he says to him, you know, did you find money? He goes, well, we found a little more than $10. And at that point, you go, why is he asking about the money? And why is Raylan saying $10? Because he's being sarcastic about it, too. And that's the moment when you can see on his face that he's going to attack because he wants to go to jail. Because
I thought he was trying to kill him.
Oh,
because
no.
Because they bring up...
Because he would hire somebody else to do it. He would not do it himself. Just like he hired...
No, for a guy that shot Ava, he would do that himself.
But not in jail. Not where he is... He can't get away.
It's all about trying to get the money. And the fact that when Ava comes out, she's like, did you kill him? It's no, did you find out where the money is? I think it's really interesting how Raylan's rejection of Ava has pushed her to the dark side. It's like... Okay, fine. And that moment when they're confessing, it's like, he's like, you know, I've taken up with my ex-wife who's having my baby. It's like, well, I'm with the woman who, my brother's widow and
oh,
murderer.
Right.
So you come to the wrong place to get penance, brother. But this is kind of a transitional episode because you know that Neil McDonough, who they introduced in the first
episode,
he's a major threat for season 3. Then you know that Bubba Gump is the other major threat.
Oh, that was a real good introduction.
Michael T. Williamson, oh, when he's telling that story.
Yeah.
And then when the kid's like quivering and then you see the back of the other guy's hand, it's like, whoa. And Carla Gugino, who obviously had a little fling with Raylan in the past, and he makes it a point to pan a big wet one on Winona. In front of her, it's like
to be like, no, we are not getting back together.
But it's just really interesting how okay, these are the new players for season 3. Let's move them around.
And I think also the prison guard because
he overheard.
He's been in other shows, so I don't see him as a one off.
No.
So there's something to do with him because if you look at his face, because he was listening in also.
Because he wanted to know where the money was too.
Something I want to put out there before we finish with this, for those listening who haven't watched Justified yet, especially for the women, we're always talking about the need for a show with strong women. This show, the women are just as equal as the guys. Just as strong, just as stupid. And I like it. I like the idea that it's well written, evenly paced, and you dig through to find what you're going to know about later on. I love this show. FX, except for a couple of shows, has always been on the money, and I still though won't forgive them for canceling Terriers. But I love the writing on Justified. It's just wonderful.
And it's funny, if you watch the pilot of Justified, neither of the women were supposed to be leads. The only female series lead in the original pilot was Rachel. And it's interesting that Raylan's ex-lover, Ava, and his ex-wife and current baby mama, Winona, are both more central to what's going on than Rachel. Although it was good to have an episode where Rachel got a little something to do, because she's badass.
Yes, very much so.
All right, next up, let's talk about White Collar. And we didn't really get to talk about it last week because you weren't here. Nobody else watches White Collar. I talked about it very quickly. I talked about the episode, but I was talking about myself.
I thought it was a lot of fun, a great episode. They're going undercover. Initially, Peter's going undercover at this ritzy private school because one of the kids at the school suspects that the new
principal.
It's the fund manager. The fund manager is embezzling.
Right.
And played by Dylan Baker, who usually tends to play bad guys. The kid is played by the son from The Good Wife.
I was like, who is that kid? I did watch The Good Wife, but I didn't remember him.
I can't think of her name. Juliana Margulies' son on The Good Wife. So Peter's supposed to be going undercover as a prospective parent who's putting his kid in there. Of course, Neil gets mistaken for a sub.
But you know, what I really like about that is once he gets mistaken for the sub, he sees it as an opportunity.
Yep.
And then I was like, what about the actual sub? And he's like, he waits outside the room for the actual sub to show up and totally brushes the guy out.
And sends him away.
That was pretty good.
So it was fun with both of them undercover. And the angle Neil's trying to work is the bad guy's daughter is in the class. And the kid who's the snitch. I wouldn't say the snitch.
Trying to make sure he stays in school. That's what he's doing.
The kid who fingered the Dylan Baker as the bad guy has a crush on his daughter.
I like the side plot of Mozzie and
Neil coaching the kid to woo the girl.
Yeah.
At best line of the show is Mozzie's giving the kid all kinds of advice with Neil, and then he says, "Hair gel. I've heard wonderful things." I've heard great things.
That was so great.
That was a brilliant line.
And also, he was trying to give him, he's like, you know how many girls that I've mated with quoting this poetry? And he goes, no, how many? And he's like, yeah, don't worry about that. So all that was all pretty good.
And at the highlight, Diana has to go undercover.
As his girlfriend.
As Peter's mistress.
Right. And she's like, and I'm pregnant. This is like, what?
So they you know, it was just... The show works together, and I know we've had some disputes about Peter and Neil being at odds, and actually talked to Tim about that, but they've got Peter and Neil on the same side again.
Yes, except I like the conversation.
And more trusting of each other, because true. Peter realizes that Neil was willing to give up the fortune to stay with this new adult life.
Right, but also, you have, when he's talking to his wife, he's like, she's like, well... look at what he gave up. He gave up the treasure for me. And he's like, yes, but he also stole it. So,
well, he didn't steal it. He knew where it was. He withheld knowledge.
Information,
but,
right.
But they're actually starting to form a real friendship slash working relationship built on more mutual trust and respect versus trying to scam each other.
What was Mozzie's deal about why he wouldn't be in the same room as the suit? He was like, you can't prove I'm here. There's not evidence. Like, what was that about?
Well, but the thing that's cool, though, is even Mozzie is warming up to Peter.
You're right.
So, and Peter's giving, you know, it's really gelling as a team. So it'll be fun to see where the season goes in the next few weeks.
Especially because his board, there was some sort of...
His review to see if he gets the anklet off.
Right.
Which, considering how many times he's been out of that thing, just get
Yeah, I'm just like, take it off. Yeah, because they take it off anytime they need to.
Yeah, at will almost. It was a fun episode.
I agree. Except the only thing that worries me is next week, somebody's threatening the wife again. I was like, didn't we just do this? Like, I think that's a little worrisome.
But, Joe Manganiello...
He's a guy from True Blood.
Actually went to college with Matt Bomer. So I was reading
an article. So they only let pretty people in that school? Is that what you're saying?
It's Carnegie Mellon. It's a really great school for
theater. I'm just like, they're like, no, you are too ugly to go here. Like, what?
but I'm sure it'll be fun because the characters are supposed to have a past of some type, I believe. Okay. And the actors do, so that should be interesting to see the two of them together.
Is he going to take his shirt off? That's all I'm going to know.
Is that all we are to you, sex object?
I'm saying for
that
him.
Is so sexist.
Especially, you know.
I'm just sitting here with a grin on my face.
You know who you're talking about.
Oh, hell yeah, I do.
Alcide.
Oh, yes. And I'm sorry, shirt and that pants.
Oh! All right, we got to a whole different level.
Oh, no, you didn't.
All right, next up, let's talk about the season or series premiere of Touch.
After I talked about the pants coming off? I'm sorry. I still have a grin on my face from my previous show. Continue,
in all honesty, one of my favorite parts of Touch was the opening credit sequence.
Oh, with a voiceover?
From the kid's narration to the actual opening sequence, I thought was brilliantly realized.
I really like that line, like how it ends with... And from, I've been alive for however many days.
I've been alive for, you know, this many days. This
days, and I've never said a word. Yeah, that was pretty good.
That kid's good.
Yeah, I really like him.
That kid is good.
Because he did really subtle, tiny smiles that it's hard to imagine a child understanding the subtlety of that. So I really like that.
My fear for this show, Peter, did you see it?
Yeah, and it's weird because I had just seen, I just watched Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close, and they kind of reminded me of each other.
I've heard there's some similarities.
Well, in that movie you have a main character that has Asperger's, and in this one the character's autistic, but they both, you know, they're both characters that are young boys that, you know, they can't really relate to the world the way the rest of us do, and the parents have a hard time with that. But I thought it was okay. I didn't love it or hate it. I honestly don't know how I feel. Like, I don't know if there's, I guess I'm not seeing enough story for a season of television. I guess that was my thing. But I thought it was well made. You know, the acting was fine.
That's my concern also. I thought as a standoff, it was a fine episode. I got a little verklempt at the end when they started revealing the connections of all the pieces. But I'm concerned that what do you do for episode two?
Right. Yeah, four. Me too.
How do you sustain that? And then, don't get me wrong, I like Kiefer Sutherland a lot. However, he does the same thing. He talks really slow. really slow. Really intensely with the gravel. And there's something going on we've got to take care of now.
Who do you work for?
So I'll be interested to see how much of a role Danny Glover plays. I thought what they did with the social worker was very predictable, but I liked the actress.
Right. All I was going to say about the Danny Glover thing, what bothered me was how the heck did he know all that stuff about the kid? There was no explanation. He was like, oh, your kid went up to the cell tower. I was like, what? Like, that's not typical behavior of a specific kind of, you know, ailment. That made no sense. And the description of, like, the math part did. Like, if your kid is only, he's writing numbers, learn math so that you can communicate. Like, that made sense to me. But
the whole thing about 318.
Right, and he was like, oh, yeah. Stretch. Yeah, I was just like, no.
That it was on March 18th and at 3:18 p.m.
Right.
I think it's kind of interesting. I have my oldest godson who just turned 18 was initially diagnosed with Asperger's and then re-diagnosed as high-functioning autism. There, you know, Asperger's is basically high-functioning autism, but I really appreciate that this show and Parenthood are actually giving ordinary television viewers an idea of what's going on with these kids. Right. That they're incredibly smart. They just can't communicate. They just don't have the social skills as children who are quote unquote normal. But the fact that this kid is brilliant, I just, because of this specific message about 318, that seems to be more supernatural than super scientific.
Right. So, yeah, because they didn't explain how he got all the phones to ring and stuff like that.
Right. And but that moment where the guy whose daughter had died and the picture comes up on the screen.
Oh, that was awesome.
That's the moment that made me verklempt.
Yeah, that choked me up a little bit too.
And when the singer is trying to talk the kid out of not blowing up the bomb,
right,
about the thing, I thought that was, but again, very writery. This is my biggest concern. The creator of the show is Tim Kring, who created Heroes.
Right.
And we know how that story ended.
Well, he actually had an article where he talks about where he screws up in Heroes and that he's trying to make sure he doesn't do that again.
But he's got to not do that again.
Right.
But I'm with it. I'm with it. But they've got a huge task to fulfill the potential of this show.
Right. I think it does have potential, so I'm definitely going to watch it. The only thing that's weird is it premiered, but the show doesn't come for a month.
Why are they showing it to...
Right. That makes no sense, because now you have to advertise again.
We sneak peeked it to whet your appetite, and it won't be on again for a month and a half.
I'm like, are you kidding? Because I was like, okay, I'll watch it, but I can't. Anyway, that's my frustration. All right, next up, on a lighter side, let's move on to the comedies. First up is Big Bang. Peter, what'd you think?
I liked it. I'm still getting a little tired of... This has been my criticism of Big Bang for a while, is I'm getting tired of Sheldon becoming like, you know, like a Bart Simpson or a Homer, where he's more just these big gags. And so the episode starts with him and Farrah Fowler doing this Fun with Flags video. And the whole thing... Yeah, see, I didn't think it was funny at all. I just thought it was dumb.
Well, I want you to know what I thought that was...
I was just like, hey, who cares? Like, I mean, it just fell flat for me. However, I did like the stuff with Raj and Suri. Like, that I thought was pretty funny.
That was, but I'm going to tell you, when him doing his video, I'm thinking, wow, we know some people who do podcasts and who do special videos on a regular basis. And you know what's scary is there is a following for everything. So I laughed hysterically during that, especially with the take 47.
I thought Mayim Bialik was brilliant in those sequences. Oh my gosh. When he conscripts her to be his co-host.
Oh, she's just like, as a pretzel?
Oh my gosh. She's such a pro. Just amazing.
Yeah, I would agree. She's great. I just didn't think the sequence was that good. But no, she's fantastic.
I didn't think it was enough to sustain an episode. Like, because basically that's all he's doing for the whole episode.
Right.
I think it was a funny little intro. Like at the beginning, it was fine. I thought it was funny. I didn't think it was enough for the whole episode.
Here's the problem. Structurally, you have a great A plot with Leonard and Penny pursuing, you know, slowly replaying their relationship.
Right.
And then you have two running gags instead of a real B plot.
Right. That is the problem.
The thing with Raj and Siri was brilliant.
The only thing that was weird is that...
The only thing?
No. What I was going to say is that a lot of shows have already done mockumentaries or whatever about nerds in their series. So I felt...
Are you serious?
Yeah. I've...
The Forest just came out in October.
I know. And that's when all the jokes came out about geeks and what they were saying... And the questions that they were asking Siri and asking her.
I don't think they've done it on a TV show yet, though, have they?
I don't know, but it feels like it's so part of... it felt so familiar to me.
It's familiar. However, it's so familiar. We expected Raj to do this, to get that intimate, and then afterwards to realize how wrong it was.
He doesn't, though.
He wakes up from the nightmare.
When he has the nightmare of meeting her in person, then he's tongue-tied. Like,
yeah.
With all women.
Yeah.
How did TiVo cut off?
You missed that?
TiVo cut off.
Oh, my God. He shows up with flowers.
They have a woman.
Gorgeous woman.
Gorgeous woman cast as Siri.
Oh, man.
And she's in front of a desk, and she's actually answering everybody's phone calls. and she's pressing the button, and she's answering that phone call, and she's pressing that button, and she's answering that phone call. And she wants him. She wants him. And he can't say a word. And then he wakes up.
And then he can't talk to his phone anymore?
Well, we don't know about that.
That was the end of the episode.
Just the idea that even in his dream, he cannot talk to her if she's real.
I wonder if that was really the voice of...
Oh, it wasn't.
It wasn't?
No.
Okay.
But it was...
It was close, but it wasn't.
It was... See, that was perfect, because I don't... I think if they had not have done Siri with him, we would have gone, oh, that's such a wasted moment, because for him, that was perfection. Absolute perfection.
I'm not saying it didn't fit, because it did, but
if
it just felt familiar.
If you had seen the last 3 minutes, you would have had a different opinion.
I don't know why my TiVo cut off. That's...
Evil TiVo.
All right.
Evil-o.
Yes. But so, my thing has been with Sheldon is that they're making too much of him in some ways.
Fonzie syndrome.
Yes. Sheldon, to me, should be a B-list. Instead, they keep writing him like he's the be-all and end-all, which is why I still have a problem with the show. Half the time, they're making fun of and laughing at rather than with. This one was a little more with because, like I said, I have friends who do this. Only it makes me look at them in a much different light and laugh harder. But again, like you said, it was just a little too long, a little too much of each of them. I think they could have cut off probably a minute from each and it would have been a lot sharper.
Or they could have had a real subplot with Howard and Bernadette.
Yes, that's true.
All right, let's move on. Next up is 30 Rock.
Okay, before we start talking about 30 Rock, I just want to smack whomever at NBC thought it was smart to air part one of a two-parter.
Last week,
part two of the two-parter this week, and then another episode which had nothing to do with them afterward. Come on, seriously?
Well, not just that, but didn't they put it in the wrong time slot?
Well, the second episode aired at a special time.
Right, which means that if you were watching something else at that time normally, you may have missed it, or it might not have recorded if you had two or more, depending, you know, what cable company you're with. It was stupid. To me, it was really stupid. It was like they've got a bunch of episodes they got to get rid of, or they had nothing to fill, and I understand some people are still ticked off about Community not being on. You know, they could have put Community on.
You know, I understand.
You know what? I wouldn't even be mad if both episodes were really good.
Yeah.
You know what?
Episode two, the best part of it was the very beginning, and then everything else was barely watchable.
Oh, yeah, the beginning was pretty funny. I agree.
MLK Day. Got milk.
Got milk, yeah.
But
I do like, the one thing I did like was that Jack was in Lemon's head, and she needed approval from him for her to date her new boyfriend.
Well, that's episode one.
Well, no, even episode two. In episode two, she decided she was going to date him anyway. And
no, that was all part of the same episode.
No,
you're talking about the thing with James Marsden. He wasn't in the second episode they aired.
He was in the first one.
He was in the first one, which was a continuation of last week.
Right.
Yes,
and that's fine.
Yeah.
Anyway. My point is, I like that storyline. I thought that was really good because he gave the guy a black circle. He's like, I disapprove officially. And the boyfriend was like, what? That doesn't mean anything. And she was like, yeah, I think it kind of does. And then he gave him a squiggly line like was maybe.
You've got 3 months.
Yes, yeah. You're on probation. And then he gave Liz a gold star.
I thought the thing with Kelsey Grammer was just so Looney Tunes.
Oh, that was so crazy. Yeah. I was like, why is Kelsey Grammer a fixer? Like, what?
I just thought it was fun.
And he was going to kill the guy first. And they're like, no, don't do that.
Poor Pete.
No?
He was like, are you sure?
Yeah.
Peter, did you see it?
Yeah, I watched them both. And I would agree with you guys. I thought I was a little nonplussed on most of them. But there were moments. I liked Lemon trying to find a new friend.
Oh, right. And she found herself.
Because of Jenna.
Yeah.
Right. I thought that was kind of funny. And then just the moment when Jenna turns on her because she's like, oh, do you want to be a celebrity? And then remember the
PETA.
Oh, right.
The leech user. Like, that's kind of funny. But yeah, the two, they were okay. And I think Tom has a good point. It is weird. Like, why didn't they just air the two-parter as a one-hour thing? Like, it's kind of strange.
And then I didn't like the second one. You know, I'm sick and tired of what's happening with the pages.
Oh, that's true.
They're not that interesting.
They're not. I mean, he's funny at times, but other than that, who cares about the pages?
No, I have to say, at the end, when Jack hugs him, I was like, oh, I did have a little awe moment.
Well, yeah, I mean, no, I would agree. And actually, to me, my favorite moment was what you guys were saying earlier was when Jack doesn't approve of Cyclops and Liz, you know, he's just like, that doesn't really matter. Who are you? And of course, Liz is freaking out. Like, that moment was pretty good because, once again, it's kind of just how much, you know, how much of an impact Jack has on characters. And so I agree, the Kenneth thing was a nice moment, too. I didn't really laugh that much in the episode.
Exactly.
Which is a problem for a comedy.
Right, I think for both episodes, they were just okay.
Yeah, I agree.
Boy, I thought last year was wildly uneven, and it looks like this year is going to be too.
Yeah, it'd be interesting
to
see.
Yeah, I'd rather have Community back.
That's true, because Community, at least, they were either really, really good, or eh.
I thought this season of Community has been pretty strong.
They've had a couple that were eh, but generally speaking, I would agree with you.
And Oscar-nominated Dean Pelton, Jim Rash co-wrote The Descendants and received an Oscar nomination Tuesday morning.
Oh, so. I thought you were just like, that has nothing to do
no,
with the
No, no,
no.
Okay. It's, but, yeah, I would rather have Community back, personally.
All right. So, thumbs sideways for 30 Rock. Next up, let's talk about Fringe.
Ooh.
This is pretty good. I mean, the only thing that was kind of weird is, okay, so last week Olivia met with one of the observers and he tells her, in every future you're going to die. So she's freaking out legitimately.
As she should.
As she should. Because she's like, who the heck is this guy? And he's from in the 1900s. So what? So I think she's legitimately freaking out. And I kept saying, talk to Peter. Talk to Peter. I was like, he's the guy that knows everything.
And when she does, she lies to him.
Why does she lie to him? That doesn't make any sense.
I think part of the problem is she doesn't really know who he is. Because he doesn't exist in this he's not supposed to exist in this reality.
But the other thing is I felt like he should have known she was lying. Because
he did know she was lying. The way Josh Jackson played that, he knows she's lying.
Okay. Because I was like, just because she doesn't know him doesn't mean he doesn't know her. So he should be able to tell when she's lying. So that was my thing about that.
I really think that this is interesting. It's taking a lot to wrap your head around it because they're in this new, you know,
universe.
You
right.
Start with two alternate realities, and now we've created this new reality, which is completely different.
Right.
And they're just starting to warm up to the fact that, okay, maybe it's this guy is who he claims to be.
The only thing that's weird is I'm counting to the fact that we only got this season to finish the story, and I don't see how they're going to do it.
I think they can do it. Here's my thing. Nina.
She's so evil.
She is totally evil. But she's in cahoots with
whoever's drugging Olivia, right?
He's in cahoots with the dude from who's in control of the new shapeshifters.
Oh, that's right. She is.
Yeah, that was the reveal last week,
right?
And then she shows up, and Olivia says, "Oh, you're just like a mother
mom.
To me." It's like, "Oh, let me prepare some chicken soup and drug you," or something else.
Exactly,
nefarious.
And it's kind of like, "Oh, I've got this new drug that'll totally help you with your headaches that we're giving you." You know, I was like, "Oh my god," and I can't. It breaks my heart a little bit because you don't really want that reveal because you know it's going to hurt Olivia
but
a lot.
Did we ever trust Nina in
reality? I've never trusted
Nina.
Right. And so it was kind of weird. It's like, in this universe, she's nice? No.
I don't think so.
In this universe, she's just as evil.
Or eviler.
Eviler. but it's all pretty good. It's all coming together. And I like Walter. Walter's a weird combination. He's actually what Walter's like in this universe. He's like he was in first season.
Mm-hmm.
He's like first season Walter.
First season Walter.
And it's because he's like, one moment he's peeing on the floor, and the next moment he's coming up with something brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little strange. And you realize how much Peter affected Walter's life.
Absolutely.
And made him more sane.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. It's good.
Let me ask you, why do you think that they have to finish this by the end of this season?
Because they're going to be canceled.
They haven't ruled out a fifth season, but I have a feeling they're going to go back to Warner Brothers and say, you need to drastically reduce your budget if you want, you know, a 13-episode pickup.
Well, yeah, because they just need to finish the arc, and I don't see how they're going to finish it right now. I don't see it by the end of the season.
I hope they can.
Because that would really suck. The story is great. I'm loving these episodes, but I don't see the end.
Evidently, Wyman has said in interviews that if this if season four is truly the end, the season finale can function as a series finale. So
yeah, it's got to be crappy one.
But to paraphrase Ricky Ricardo, they got lots of splitting to do.
That's true. Interesting choice of a quote, but all right. All right, thumbs up for Fringe. Next up, let's talk about the season premiere of Spartacus
Vengeance.
I'd like to let you know we did not practice that ahead of time. So I got to see the episode like 2 weeks ago.
I got a sneak peek too.
So it's a little fuzzy, but I do like the fact that they literally pick up right where we left off at the end of the season.
It's been a couple weeks.
Well, okay. They did not pick up at the same second, but it's very much like, okay, the slave rebellion just happened. All right, go. You know, and it shows that they're outnumbered. They don't have enough weapons. They don't have enough food. So, like, all the constraints, and they're, like, living in the sewers. So, all the constraints you would imagine a slave rebellion to have, because where do they go to get freedom? Rome is a huge empire, so they don't really have any place to go, and they don't even have a plan. So what's really interesting is watching all these characters bump up against each other. One person wants to find his girlfriend, and he wants to do whatever it takes, but he has no idea where she is. And the other guy wants vengeance on the guy who killed his wife.
And yeah, I mean, the conflict is, Spartacus' plan is, I want vengeance for my wife's death. And Crix's plan is, I want to find my squeeze.
Right. And they are the two leaders, and they're diametrically opposed right now.
Although, it's interesting that Crix... I like how the show has developed with the bromance slash frenemyship between these two guys.
Right.
Because when Spartacus first comes to the Ludus, he and Crixus are definitely not... They're not besties.
No.
And then through the course of season one, they become...
They become more allies.
They become begrudging allies.
Right.
But as we start season two, we're starting to get to, okay, we are allies, definitely. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to call you out if you need it.
Right.
So it's interesting to see. And I thought they did something really smart is because Liam McIntyre has literally big sandals to shoe with the unfortunate passing of Andy Whitfield. What they do is they really define Spartacus by his relationships with everybody else, specifically Crixus and his antipathy toward Glauber, who is responsible for his wife's death.
Right.
And that was really smart. And just, again, with the chess piece metaphor, saying, okay, this is where we're starting the season with. And from watching some of the behind-the-scenes stuff, it's like, there's going to be another high body count by the end of the season. And nobody's safe.
Right.
Perhaps except for Spartacus, because I think they have like an X-year plan for the series, because we know how the story ends historically.
Right. That's not going to be good. But what I also think, the other side of the story, is we actually got a lot of time with Glauber and his wife, Ilithia. And we spent We spent a lot of time with them, and we got to see that Glauber this season is standing up to her more than he did last season.
Yes, he is.
Because basically, he's in this whole situation because of her. So he's like, screw that. I'm not going to be subservient to you anymore. We're doing this my way. And part of it, he's also kind of punishing her a little bit, too.
Absolutely. Because she killed... I have notes on it. But when she killed that woman, I mean, literally beat her to death. That puts him at risk, because if that secret gets out, they're done for.
Right.
They are totally done for. And one of my favorite moments of the whole episode is when they go back to the House of Badiatis to literally clean up, and they find Lucy Lawless wandering around, and they think she's a ghost.
Well, she does. Ilithia does. Everybody else knows she's not
a ghost. Well, no. I rewatched it Friday. They think she's a ghost. And then they realize, oh my God, she's still alive. And this complicates things because she's acting PTSD in a daze. But knowing how crafty she is she really, or is she playing them?
I don't know. I don't know if she was playing that. A lot of really traumatic stuff actually happened.
Oh, it did. But still, trust me, there's going to reach a point where you know she's going to regain her composure.
Oh, yeah, I know.
I mean, basically, for me, the moment was when she sees Crixus and touches the scar where that child was past tense.
Right.
She's like, you know that there's a flicker of recognition and he sees her, so she's not completely gone.
Right. And then when she saw Spartacus, she had absolute fear in her eyes.
Absolutely. So I just love that she... I'm cribbing some from the review I did for Whedonopolis. And the other wild card is Animaeus, formerly known as Doctore, because he's basically... He's also a fugitive.
Yeah, but he's off the grid. He's totally not working with anybody.
He's totally off the grid. And so... We don't know whose side he's on, because he's ticked.
What's crazy about the whole Animaeus thing is, you know that he is a champion of the arena. So you're thinking to yourself, hey, let me and my buddies come out there and blackmail him, or maybe, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, are you kidding me?
Are you in freaking sane?
This dude, you have seen him as a champion of the arena, so you think... Oh, I could totally bully him and get him to tell me this information because we outnumber him, like, you know, 3-1.
And they all end up dead.
That was the dumbest thing. Like, if I knew somebody was a champion MMA fighter, I don't care how many of my friends I had with me, I'm not starting that fight.
Hey, you're that serial killer who who slit everybody's throats.
Yes, let's...
I'm going to turn you in for money.
Yes, that was
what?
So...
Oh, you're going to kill me and my friends? That's crazy.
I was just like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, that was... Like, they deserved to die because they were
that
dumb.
Yes, they did.
But that was... Like, I'm really excited about his storyline and what's going to happen. And I would remind you that those interviews are online. And I keep promising I'm going to put them on the podcast when I have a chance to edit them together. So, thumbs up, right?
Definitely.
So, cannot wait till the next episode.
In Gladiator Times, isn't thumbs up a bad thing? Isn't thumbs sideways the good thing?
No,
thumbs up, you get to live.
I thought it was opposite from the
Thumbs down, they kill you. Did you not watch the show? They did it a bunch of times on the show.
No, but for real, in Gladiator Times, I think they've got it. That's what we've become accustomed to see in 21st century.
Oh.
But that's actually incorrect.
Okay, somebody Wikipedia that and let us know.
Or even better, go to a real library.
I know. All right.
No, just one more thing. I thought that I thought McIntyre, the biggest problem I have with him is he's 10 years younger than Whitfield. And so he doesn't quite have the gravitas, the world weariness that Whitfield had. Just, it's a function of age. But he does look a lot enough like him.
Right. I thought he carried it well.
Yeah. I mean, I think he'll grow into the role. But Spartacus is back with a vengeance.
No, you did not just go there. All right. So that's it for this week. And I wanted to let everybody know I just put the podcast up on Stitcher. So if that's an easier way for you to get the podcast, go for it.
So we're on Stitcher, iTunes, Krypton Radio, and Get the Point.
Go ahead. Nice. See you.
Wow.
Yeah, look at that.
And Whedonopolis.com.
Yes.
.com.
I like that. I'm going to have to record you guys doing it so I don't have to say it. And remember, if you have feedback, send it to tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. And we're on Facebook. Look at that. All right. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.